From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Patrick McDuffie believes that everyone should have at least one scented geranium on their windowsill year-round for an on-demand whiff of fragrance, or to admire its colorful flowers, or to make a home-brewed cup of herbal tea. Patrick is the third generation of his family to cultivate scented geraniums at Wellsweep Herb Farm in rural New Jersey, where 80-something pelargonium varieties are among some 2,000 different kinds of herb plants in the nursery's amazing collection. More in a moment about Wellsweep and scented geraniums, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Wellsweep Herb Farm is a popular destination nursery in Port Murray, New Jersey, founded in 1969 by Cyrus and Louise Hyde, which today has more than 6 acres of themed gardens to explore. My guest, Patrick McDuffie, who's nursery manager, is one of three generations of the extended Hyde family who bring Wellsweep to life, including his grandmother and his uncle, David Hyde, who runs the business. Each garden season, Wellsweep hosts a couple of weekend-long festivals, with the next one, its fall flower festival and craft market, set for August 30th and 31st, with lots of expert talks and tours and more, including what Patrick is calling a scented geranium deep dive that he's offering. I'm glad to welcome him to the program today, and good to talk to you again. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing well.
How is it out there in herb world?
We are experiencing a drought at the moment and watering as much as we can.
Yes, it's madness. This has been a year of challenges, definitely, definitely. Well, I so enjoyed working together on our recent New York Times garden column that we did about Wellsweep and about the scented geraniums and so forth. The 80-something scented geraniums are like a collection within the bigger collection of the nursery. You have deep groups of number of other plants too, yes? There are other specialties?
There's 50 different types of mint and 60 different types of lavender. I'm just, you know, guesstimating. Probably 200 different varieties of thyme, 40 or so different types of rosemary, 20 to 30 oreganos. So any one of those herbs, there's a massive collection. And then on top of that, there's a large amount of medicinal herbs for our herbalists in the region. We do a lot with the American Herbalist Guild here locally, and lots of natives and other rare plants and antique plants.
Yes. And then I think that as if that's not enough, I think maybe you and maybe your uncle too enjoy carnivorous plants. Is that correct? Is that another specialty now?
It is. That has become a specialty. When I came over a decade ago now from James Madison University, I used to work in a tissue culture lab as an intern, where I got to cut up Venus flytraps in test tubes under sterile conditions. And when I came here, my grandfather had one fish tank in the back with a collection of things that he had collected, and I knew how to go in there with a scalpel. And we do a lot of terrariums in living sphagnum moss, and I can almost recreate lab like conditions in that stuff because it's so full of antibiotics and antifungals and rooting hormones that I was able to slice and dice and start selling a few. And then my uncle, who runs the business, saw that people were into it, and he expanded the collection even larger.
Yeah. And he's a native plant enthusiast, I think, David Hyde, isn't he as well?
He is, and a lot of those are all natives, so that's one of the reasons he really, really got into it, is because he could add every single one of these to his native lectures or his funky plant lectures.
And so as if that were not enough, then you also inherited from your grandfather, I believe, a lot of roosters with very long tails.
Yes, I did. They are the closest thing we have to Onagadori here in the U.S. And yes, I inherited his flock, and I did a lot of genetics classes that were originally inspired by understanding all the genetics of these particular roosters. And so now I breed them and sell them all over the country now.
Yeah, just a few little passions, huh? for diversity.
Yes.
So I think your grandfather, Cyrus Hyde, from whom, by the way, decades ago, I used to mail order a lot of plants for my garden. So I've known Wellsleep Sweep a long time. I think he sort of handed down the scented geranium gene to you, Patrick. I think he gave you a scented geranium when you were a teenager, maybe?
I think I was probably 16 or 17 when I got my first rose geranium, which he taught me to train into a topiary. And that first one, we've talked about rose geranium, how it's relatively tolerant of many conditions compared to some of the other ones. And so I moved almost every year of college to a different dorm room, different apartment, and it managed to live on some northeastern facing windowsills, some east, some west, and it managed to come up to me to the farm for quite a few years until I overzealously root pruned and top pruned it at the same time one year, and a little bit too much tough love, and I killed it. But I've gotten better at the art of topiary since then, so the two that I have recreated in its stead are much nicer than the original.
Mm. But the old-fashioned rose geranium was your first pelargonium, your first scented geranium, and I think you use it for, I mean, it has many uses, as do many of the scented geraniums, and as do many of the herbs in your collection, other mm-hmm. things too. Like what else you can make tea? I think you even use it sort of when you go out as a bug repellent. I mean, don't you use it for other things as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. If I feel like going on a hike tonight, I will grab a couple of leaves and rub up my shins down and leave them in my sock, and it stops the ticks from coming up my legs. And if you look at an organic tick repellent, you can look at the ingredient list and it will always have pelargonium graveolens in there as well. I'm about to shape prune my topiaries probably tonight or tomorrow night, and I will be taking some cuttings of them, but then taking off all the broad leaves and handing them to my grandmother to do a multitude of rose geranium cakes that I will be featuring in a lot of my tea courses through the both at the festival and in the fall as a little tea accompaniment. And I will also probably use it in my tea courses as well.
Yeah. So it's even just the rose, which is a familiar scent of the scented geraniums. And we should say, so they're pelargoniums. I think they're from various areas in Southern Africa originally. And the range of scents is pretty staggering. I mean, most people know about the rose and the citrus, for instance, but wow. I mean, that's not even a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, not at all. People are most familiar with either that or the what goes by mosquito plant or citronella plant, which we call Citrosa pelargonium here.
Mm-hmm.
We have another one we call citronella, which is what I would argue is the true citronella with a much better fragrance to it, with a much more circular leaf. And then, yes, it goes everywhere from black pepper to southernwood to some the oak leaf types that smell indistinctly like wood, or some that smell like Parmesan cheese even, or lime or lemon or oranges or strawberries. So I often have a kid come up to me and I say, what's your favorite flavor? And it doesn't always work. Sometimes they'll say something really obscure, but most of the time I can be like, okay. And then I'll reach down and grab a scented geranium of that flavor and have him smell it.
A way to get kids to engage with plants for sure is to amaze them like that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Just among the sort of minty ones, you know, there's like chocolate mint and peppermint and, you know, all kinds of.
Peppermint is a very popular one with a very fuzzy, lower growth habit and a large fuzzy leaf. Chocolate mint is similar to it, a little more upright with a good red center to the leaf. There's peppermint spice is another one of my favorite ones with a nice almost skeleton rose look to it with a nice upright growth habit. I've once made a topiary out of that one. And yeah, the mint flavors continue to go on. There's mint rose and variegated mint rose, which my grandmother likes.
They're and when you want to do tea, do you just kind of pinch off some leaves and put them in the cup and pour some hot water over it? Is it as simple as that, or is there something you don't dry them, or what's the
I don't dry them.
yeah.
You could dry them, but I really love a fresh cut tea. So I will use fresh herbs as much as I possibly can, or accent a dried herb with a fresh herb. And usually I do a little bit of shape pruning. So I like to make art out of my herbs, and a pruning opportunity presents itself every time I want to make a cup of tea. So
It's
if
a
I don't let
harvest. It's a harvest too, right?
Yep. So if I have one branch that's going kind of in the wrong direction or a little bit too tall, that's kind of asking me to make a cup of tea. And I'll take just maybe the top three leaves as a sprig per cup.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's even like a coconut one. Did I read in the catalog? And a
Yes,
vanilla one?
coconut would be like the weed of the Pelargonium family, and it will sometimes reseed itself in our garden, very low growing,
Oh.
but very distinctly coconut. I mean, and it's definitely one of the landrace varieties from Africa. So the rose geranium. And yes, there is French vanilla, which has taken, which is a fragrance as the species hybrid. Old Spice geranium used to be our top seller in the fragrance world. Until just, I think it was 2 years ago, one of our volunteers, his name's Greg, and he is a geranium fanatic, and he helps us maintain the collection just for his own fun now that he's retired. And he helped introduce the French vanilla and the black pepper l about 2 years ago, and they have both become two of our favorites.
Oh, cool. And I know there are other pelargoniums that we in gardening call the fancy leaf geraniums as opposed to the scented geraniums.
True.
But some of these scented ones have some pretty beautiful leaves. You were just talking, for instance, about some of the peppermint ones having kind of very fuzzy, silvery, leaves. They're ornamental, and some of them have very dissected kind of leaves, and some are grayish and some are variegated. And
Yeah.
so they're not unshowy, even though they're not technically the fancy leaf geraniums.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could subdivide these into those that are bred for their flower, or those that are bred for their fragrance, or those that are bred for their foliage. And there's a lot of beautiful variegated forms that have the most gorgeous foliage on them, if that's what you're into. Or there are some that have some of the most gorgeous scarlet or red flowers, or just are very floriferous and will bloom and bloom and bloom. So it's really about, what you want out of your geranium. That's why I say there's a geranium from every but for everybody, because there's so
Right.
many different uses for them.
And that's why you have 80 something off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so speaking of variegated, I believe your grandfather bred some sort of lemony scented ones that have some
Yes, so
bicolor kind of stuff going on or whatever.
Lemon Crispum geranium is the Victorian one known as the finger bowl geranium, and it's a great lemon fragrance with a really tight small leaf, and they'll float those leaves on a bowl of water during Victorian times to rinse their fingers as they ate. Anyways, he found maybe 30 years ago a sport on one branch with a golden edge, and he named that Well Sweep Golden, and that hyper mutated again another decade or so later for a very beautiful golden edge, which he named Size Sunburst. And that one has really gotten popular, to the point now where he never patented anything, so anyone could propagate it, and definitely made its way all over the US and beyond. I know that he's had friends in Russia and China that have reached out to him via letter and say, hey, Cy, we've got your plant over here.
And this is not a s what you're describing when there's like a spore, when something just occurs on one part of a plant, and then you say, maybe that can make a new variety. This is not a quick process. This is no get rich quick scheme, whether you patent it or not, is it? I mean, it takes a while to I think you're doing this to yourself, yes?
I am, and every it depends on the sport. some sports, like in peaches, peach trees will go from fuzzy to not fuzzy all the time. And you can clone that branch that you want and make a fuzzy or a fuzzless peach. And the same thing happens in the geranium world. You can have a sport variegate. And the more variegated something it is, the less chlorophyll it has, and the more difficult of a cutting it is to take. So, Yes, I think my grandfather got good energy, so he probably got them to root right away. But I have one that is an all gold sport of his size sunburst, and it's very sensitive to light and improper watering. So it's taken me a couple trial and errors to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. So it's a multi-year process for sure to begin to get some cuttings to then build up some stock plants to then ... I mean,
You never want to keep all your eggs in the same basket. Chicken analogies.
Yeah, well, you know something about chickens. but it's really remarkable because, again, we could choose them for, as I said in the introduction, we could choose them for their flowers. We could choose them because we want to just have something on the windowsill that we can like put our hand on and get a whiff of this intoxicating fragrance and be just invigorated, you know, and just feel good, even when it's sort of the shut-in season of the winter, have one of these incredible fragrances, or to make tea and so forth. I said they're from like Southern Africa and so forth. So they're not hardy in most of the United States. Clearly, these are tender plants. I guess they're perennials in their homelands, in their native haunts.
Yeah.
So like, what's the way that one makes a long time partnership with a scented geranium? You know.
I like to do them in containers because I know they're not going to winter over, though we do plant them out in our garden, or some people like to plant them out in window boxes. But if you want to let them die as an annual, that is your own prerogative. But if you want to make a long-term friend of it, they like their own container, plant it alone, and turn them into an art project. They all have different growth habits, so some of them can be very trainable if you're into topiary like I am, or can be left to their own sprawling habit, in which case they can dangle over a pot almost like a hanging basket really beautifully, or turn into, some of them have smaller leaves and they can turn into almost like little miniature bonsais. And they all bloom, even the ones that have delicious fragrance. So if you don't prune it, you will often get flowers on the terminal branches.
Okay. So the pinching and so forth that we might be doing is going to deter bloom.
I rarely see flowers on my rose geranium topiaries, except for in February when I haven't pruned it in a long time and it's in the greenhouse away from the wind, so it can get kind of leggy without falling over. And I will sometimes get flowers just as I'm about to take some cuttings, and I'll be like, oh man, but it's so beautiful. I guess I'll just let it bloom for a little while before I trim it.
Mm-hmm. So if I have them in pots and I've had them in my garden and it gets to be, you know, we're in the Northeast, both of us, you know, it gets to be sometime in September, October.
They can't get the frost. So they have to be moved in before the frost.
Okay. And I'm looking for a sunny windowsill.
Yes. General rule I teach my waterers is that the smaller the leaf on a geranium, the more sunny and dry it needs it.
Okay.
So if you were into some of the crispum geraniums we were just talking about, or some of the fragrance varieties like the French vanilla, they definitely want a southwest facing windowsill. And a lot of the larger varieties can be more tolerant of an east or a west facing windowsill.
Because they have more leaf real estate, so to speak, to do photosynthesis. And this is,
I guess they can handle more water and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're less likely to be overwatered.
Okay.
With less light, I teach people with less light means less water. So if you don't have prime real estate on a south-facing window, just don't water it as much on your east-facing window. These geraniums are from Africa, and they can handle very arid soil. So you really want to let them get nice and dry in between a good heavy drink.
So I've got it on my windowsill. I brought it in. It's spent my summer outside in the garden, but then I've brought my pot in and I've placed it in the sunniest place I can give it, especially the ones that have the smaller leaves, and I'm not going to overwater. And we spend the winter together. Do I pinch during the winter or do I just leave it alone or
I would leave it
and
alone.
leave it alone, let it do its thing?
Yeah, if it's too big to come in, you need to do a little bit of shape pruning before you make it to the windowsill because you got a obsessive collection like I do. Then you might need to trim off some of the side branches so you can fit some other pots around it. But besides that, don't do pruning over the wintertime. And the reason is because it's not getting enough light. So you'll see your plant kind of get longer internodes through the wintertime and get a little bit leggy. And I just like to let them do their thing. And your goal is to get them to make it through the wintertime. And the only time I trim them through the wintertime is when I'm making tea on a couple of the branches that are getting a little bit too leggy. But the reason that I don't want people to prune it too much over the wintertime is because when you prune, you stimulate more growth on the base. And the winter growth is going to be leggy. So I don't like to stimulate that new growth by pruning it until we hit the springtime. So when I'm ready to take it out in maybe May, hopefully by Mother's Day in our area, I can take it outside right after our last frost and I can give it a shape prune. And by doing that and then putting it in the full sun, all that new growth that comes will be much tighter and a lot stronger and a lot more stable for when we get all that wind later in the year.
Any other, like, are we repotting? Are we root pruning? Are we doing anything else? Or we're just.
As above, so below. So if you're going to trim the top, you should probably prune the bottom as well.
So that's going to make it sort of the two being related and should be comparable. And fast draining soil,
Yeah,
fertilizer.
well-draining soil. They can handle sandy, almost cactus-like soil, but they also do just fine in a rich soil as long as you avoid words like moisture control, because they don't want their moisture controlled. They want to be well draining. So I just look for natural potting mixes, things that have bark and perlite in them. Mix a little granular fertilizer in there. Do a nice clean cut. So something people learn, almost all gardeners learn, is to break up the soil with their hands and break up the roots with their hands. And I discourage almost everyone from doing that from a plant from Well Sweep Herb Farm because it's in good soil. That's something you do when you are trying to rescue a plant that has I won't talk bad on anybody, but you know, if you get a plant that's planted in bad soil that's been on a fertilizer drip, it wants to be bare rooted from that nutrient poor soil and repotted. But if you have a nice healthy plant, use a nice clean knife and just slice off a couple of sides. And
Reduce the root ball a little bit.
yep, reduce the size of the root ball and then replant it with some new soil around the edges. You don't need to get all aggressive with the root system.
So in the last, like, we have maybe 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to ask about August 30 and 31, I think it is, right? The festival, the
Yes,
fair.
our fall flower festival where we have lots of guest speakers coming to talk on butterflies and birds and bitters and making of gin, and we have craft vendors.
Mushrooms.
And mushrooms, yes. Smugtown mushrooms out of New York will be coming down here to do a couple of talks each day as well.
They're great, and so it's really like, I mean, people can sign up for various things. There's stuff going on Saturday and Sunday at all different
Yeah,
hours
and
you're doing.
there's no signups. It's free. You can just walk in and
Oh,
come
you
to the
don't have to
classes.
register in advance.
Correct. We will have some classes. Smugtown will be coming back to do some classes. All of our herbalists will be doing classes through the fall. I will be doing some tea courses through the fall. So they'll be able to come here and get our schedule and look at the classes in the future. But this day is all free.
Oh, great. So it's just walk in and partake.
Correct.
Wow.
Yep.
That's incredible. And enjoy the 6 acres of gardens as well.
Yep. Plenty of gardens and lots of vendors and farm animals.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how you do it. It's a lot. You've got a lot going on over there.
It's a
but
labor of love for sure.
yeah, and I it's so beautiful that the three generations are there together loving it. I think that's what makes it so special. It's a beautiful story, and I'm so glad to have met you, and I'm glad to talk to you again. So thank you so much, Patrick McDuffie from Wellsweep Herb Farm.
Thank you.
I hope I'll talk to you again soon. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.